What? Poor. Yeah, it's not like it's like some long story. It's some very, very big person that gave me a hug. He meant very well. You know, and I'm Michael him. And the second he did it, I said, I'm Michael you. And he kept on hugging. But I can't, it's going to make me laugh. Okay, so now, so should I start talking to you? Do you know what kind of effort I had to put on this tie this morning? It wasn't pretty. Okay. I took a Nurofen. I took a Nurofen and it's not working. And I'm moody. Did I tell you guys I'm moody or no? Okay. So now, can I tell you first the vort and then you'll ask questions or no? Were you there? Okay. The worst is I'm so nervous that someone's going to come near me. I keep on like looking around. So, you want to hear a nice vort? I think it's a very nice vort. Are you guys staying or not staying?
Most
guys are now?
Most of the people here.
But you're going to miss Yom Liyam. And partying with the Rebbeim. Where am I going? It says I'm taking you guys on a trip. I'm going Yom Liyam.
We'll go to the zoo.
What?
We'll go to the zoo.
Oh, we'll go to the zoo together. Yes. Oh, the best time. You guys never went with me to the zoo.
Do you have a laser pointer?
I told my wife I really don't want to come here this morning. She says to me, "Why go? Because I'm going to laugh the whole time."
All animals have tails. That means they took the vaccine.
I took the vaccine and it just broke my rib. Now listen, I'll tell you a very nice part. I tell you, mamsha nice part. But then you'll ask questions. So there's mamasha, a big kasha. You want to bring me a chumash? Bring me any chumash. You should know it's a good sign. But I was no. Okay. I was dreading coming here this morning. But you have no idea. All right. No. It's because I love you guys, and I'm gonna laugh, and I know that I can't do it without. But okay. Listen to this. This is one of the psukim in the parsha that doesn't get much of a... I would be surprised even if most of the guys knew this pasuk. I don't know if at your age I knew this pasuk, so I would imagine that most of us didn't know this pasuk. Look at the whole parsha, everybody knows. Moshe Rabbeinu goes, and there's the Chet HaEgel. And the Chet HaEgel is a very shver parsha. And exactly what was going on, they just said Nasa V'Nishma. And then all of a sudden they do this, the Chet HaEgel. And then what happens next? The Moshe Rabbeinu davens for Klal Yisrael. Okay? Everyone knows it says Mecheni Na Misifrecha. And everyone knows that last week's parsha Moshe Rabbeinu's name is not there. Because the Keshbaruch had to wait and wait and wait until like the last second, until he could, you know. But he can't anymore, and he took him out of Tetzava. Derech Agav, if you think about it, the parsha that expresses the most that Moshe Rabbeinu is an integral part of Torah is Tetzava. Right? Think about it. And the parsha starts Ata Tetzava, Ata this, Ata that. Who's Ata? Who's the Keshbaruch we're talking to? Who Ata? You this. Who maybe is talking to Aaron? So what's the answer? The answer is that Moshe Rabbeinu is so much a part of Torah that all you have to do is say the word Ata, and it's Ata, right? And it's obviously a reference to Moshe Rabbeinu. So the parsha which is Moshe Rabbeinu is not found in is the parsha that expresses that Moshe Rabbeinu is the most Chedek of Torah. There are people like that, right? There are people that you know, their whole mitzvah is Torah, is mitzvah, is a chesed. You know, there's a person, he walks into the room, he says, Torah just walked in, or chesed just walked in, or there's a people like that, that their whole mitzvah is that, but that's not what we're going to talk about. But listen to this. So then afterward, Moshe Rabbeinu davens for Klal Yisrael, and what happens? After Moshe Rabbeinu davens, so now there's a pasuk. You guys tell me if I'm right, because I tell this to other people, and I don't know if I'm right. I don't think most people know what happened now. So it says like this, Moshe, in pasuk zayin, in parak lamed gimel pasuk zayin, Moshe yikach es ha'oil v'notaloi michutz l'machane. I just wonder, you guys wear all these like tight pants and stuff. I don't know how you guys do it now. I understand it's more difficult than I thought. Moshe yikach es ha'oil v'notaloi michutz l'machane. What did Moshe Rabbeinu do at that point after he davened? What did he do? Moshe took his oil, he took his tent, right? Where are you going? Where's he going? He packed up his tent, he started, you know, he packed up the sukkah. Did you guys notice that Moshe had a hard day, right? He was up in Shemayim for 40 days. It was very anticlimactic. He expected to come down. He had Torah in his hand. He had learned for 40 straight days from Akash Baruch Hu. He didn't eat bread. He didn't eat water. He did nothing but learn Torah for 40 straight days in Akash Baruch Hu. the entire time. It was a Ruchnius experience. He was waiting and waiting to share. You know, that the Chaim Shmulevitz used to say that a person, if he would have an incredible experience, if he wouldn't be able to share it with somebody else, it's just not worth it, right? It's not worth it. A person that would, you know, something unbelievable happens to him, he has nobody to share it with, so then it's just not worth it. It doesn't have the same. So Moshe Rabbeinu just received the Torah. He just received the Torah. He received the 40 days of Torah, the whole Torah, everything that we're learning till today. And he wanted to come down to share it with Klal Yisrael. And there's nobody there. Imagine how anticlimactic that was. No, his mamash, it was probably a hard day, right? What would, you know, sometimes you have like a good zman, and after the zman, it just like pops, right? It does that type of thing. So what happens? So Moshe Rabbeinu comes down, nobody there, everybody's with the eagle. It's very upsetting. It's very, very anticlimactic. I'm saying, clicks from the whole chita eagle. You never think about this. No, it's very anticlimactic. He wanted to share it with Klal Yisrael. So what happens? Moshe Rabbeinu goes and davens. He saves Klal Yisrael. And now what does he do? So you know, the person has a bad thing. He goes like on vacation. Moshe Rabbeinu moved. He moved Divers. He moved to New Jersey. He moved. He says, Moshe yikach es ha'oil v'not d'loy michutz l'machane. He went and he moved. He used to be in the machane with everybody and he moved. Where did he move to? Chutz l'machane. Rashi says, he moved outside the tchum. On Shabbos they couldn't come to Moshe Rabbeinu. It was outside the tchum. They would have to make an air of tchumen. Okay? So, the Karoloi oil moyed. And not only did he move, he made a new shtiebel. You know, like a breakaway shul. Right? He made a new shtiebel, oil moyed. Oil moyed, a new place. And wait, and it gets more. You want to come to me? You have to come to me. What? Mamish. Stolzingdana. And you know, I have a question. Whatever happened to, like, you know, you made Makare, if you have to be Makare with the right hand. You think he made Bali Tshuva with this? No, I don't even know. But am I right that most people don't know this pasuk even? The Moshe Rabbeinu moved. Am I right? Who knew this? Did anybody know this? Right? Don't say yes. It would ruin my fact. But you know, no, but I'm right. You didn't. You knew this. Say the emes. You knew or you didn't know. You didn't know this. Right? But no, it's a pella. He moved. I don't think any Bali Tshuva came from this. I'm telling you. I don't think anybody came from because of this maisa. And he moved out. And okay, so this, you mask him that it's a good enough kasha that I should tell the answer? Yeah? Okay. No. You make it kedai for me to come in today. Yeah. Okay, so I'm going to tell you the answer. There was a great guy, I don't know his name, but he was such a great guy that they called him the Goyim Unsdorf. I don't know what his real name was, but like, you know, they don't call me the Goyim Ramat Shlomo, right? So they, you know, he was the Goyim Unsdorf. And he had a kasha. He had a kasha like this. His kasha was that the Gemara Brach is very famous Gemara. You guys know the Gemara. The Gemara Brach is Daf Kaf Ches. Talks about when Rabbi Gamliel was the Rosh Hashiva, you could only come into the base medrash if you were Toichai Kibari. You know that Gemara. The Gemara says that he used to put a shomer, right, big Satmar Chassid by the door, and nobody gets in unless he's Toichai Kibari. Nobody can come into the base medrash unless he's Toichai Kibari. That's a famous Gemara. And the Gemara tells us that Rabbi Gamliel got into a fight with Rabbi Shua, a whole story over there, and Rabbi Gamliel lost his shteller. Who took over the shteller? Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah had a different shita. His shita was, everybody wants to come into the base medrash can come into the base medrash. Very famous. You know this, right? The Gemara says that on that day, when Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah became the Rosh Hashiva, they added 400 benches to the base medrash. Ve'yesh oimrim 700 benches. You know that Gemara? 400 benches and 700 benches, and everybody came into the base medrash, and that was the end of the Gemara. So this going from Unsdorf asked a question. He said, first of all, what bichlal? How's it shaykh somebody can stand by the door and know if you're Toich HaKibara? Right? I can know. What? Sorry? In other words, that is inside like his outside. The Gemara says he didn't let anybody in unless he knew he was a pneumistic person, that what was going on in there was good stuff. How can anybody stand by the base medrash door and say, yeah, you know what's he, Eichmann Yimachshim, how can he stand in the base medrash and say, you know, right? So it's not shy. What? Oh, so the big tzaddikim like myself were able to tell, but who says that, you know? No, it's not a big pellet. Another kasha is that on the day that he let them into the base medrash, what should it have said? If I was writing the Gemara, I would have said on that day, 23,000 people came into the base medrash. Who cares about benches? Right? Who cares about benches? On that day, 400 benches were added to the base medrash. Who cares about benches? It should have said 23,000 people were led into the base medrash. Good kasha. No, it's a good kasha. It's a good kasha. So he said like Mardikavar. He said like this. Now listen to what I'm going to say. This is what was good to come for this. There are a lot of people that they learn and they do Vaidis Hashem in general because everybody else is doing it. There's social pressure, right? There's, you know, like my parents happy, all the friends are coming. Everybody's going to yeshivas. I'll go to yeshiva. There's people that they sit in kayul because of that reason for the first couple of years and whatever. You can't do that for more than 2 or 3 years, right? But you can do it for a couple of years. You can go to yeshiva for that reason. I learn because everybody else learns when it's popular to learn, when it's fanfare, when it's exciting to learn, when everybody's doing it. Then I learn. Some people have the pressure because it'll make my parents happy. I have a brother that does it, right? And it's not toichei kibara. He's not doing it. He's not doing it because he had that inner rotzen to learn. He does it for other people. He does it for other people. And then there's people that's their life. They want to learn. They love Torah. They might not be able to learn for their whole life or all day long or whatever. But when they get to learn, they love to learn. They love to learn. And the avodah that a person's supposed to do is to come to that point where I want to learn, right? Not when I do it because of other people and etc. So he said like this, what's the difference? How are you going to be able to tell when somebody's learning Torah? Because it's external. You know, everybody else is doing it, so I'll do it also. The monkey, the see, and the monkey do. Yeah? How are you going to know when it's yeah and when it's not? So he says like this. He says, whenever, and Doik V'Tishkach, this is the emes. Whenever the going gets tough, and there's something, there's a problem, so then if I'm doing it because of some external reason, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to do it. So Rabbi Gamliel put by the door, Shaymer, he told him, make it difficult to come into the base Medrash. Right? The second it was difficult to come to the base medrash, a guy comes to the door, I want to learn. You know, there's not that many seats here. You know, I'll find a different base medrash. I don't need this. I can't learn under pressure. You know, I can't learn without discomfort, and I can't, you know, it's not for me. I don't want the pressure of having to be here at 9 o'clock and leaving at 1 o'clock and whatever. Berega, that you're learning for an external reason. Berega, you're doing it because of other people. Then whatever reason, there's going to be some other external reason not to learn. So then you're going to get knocked out. So he was maimed a shaymer by the door. He put a shaymer by the door, and the shaymer didn't like a look and say, you yes, you no. He put him by the door. The guy said, it's not for me. Not for me. But then there's other people that they learn because they want to learn. And he came to the door. He tells him, you know, it's not going to be so easy. I don't care. I'll learn in a train station, right? He tells him, okay, but you know, you got to come back tomorrow, and you got to be here on time, and you got to this. I'm here. Doesn't care if there's benches. Doesn't care. Whatever. I'm here. I'm learning in this base medrash. What does the Gemara say? Zok the Gemara, on the day that Rabbi Gamliel lost his job, and Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah opened up the yeshiva, so he knew that day is going to happen, that who's coming into the base medrash? Everybody's coming, even the guys that learn, just because everybody else is learning, right? So we got to make him comfortable, because they're not going to stay otherwise. So they brought in 400 benches. They brought in 700 benches. The Nick is not the people. Because they were trying to make it comfortable for them, you know, that everybody should be able to come. Because they wanted them to stay. And this is, you know, there's two malchim and chinuch in this, right? When you look in our yeshivas, I'm afraid to say the number, but maybe it's 49%, maybe it's 51%, right? But whatever it is, there's a lot of people out there that are just doing it because everybody else is doing it. You all know that. It's not a secret. Everybody knows that. And our yeshivas cater to that also, because we want everybody to learn. And maybe, who knows, maybe toshalei l'shma, bal l'shma, maybe it'll, right? But how do you know who are the people that are really the toichei kibarai? Those are the people that they'll learn, whatever it is. When the people aren't learning, like at the end of this month, right, in these types of times, right? So when no one else is learning, I'll still be learning because I'm not learning because of other people. I don't do it because of other people. I do it because I love Torah. That's Torah Kibar, right? Once it's external and difficult, it's ready after Purim, it's ready this, it's manim and this and that and whatever, right? So then he's not going to learn. He's not going to learn. That's the pshat over here in Moshe Rabbeinu. The pshat is the goy me'unzer, if he says this pshat. He says, Moshe Rabbeinu heard them all say, Nasiv and Nishma, we want Torah, we love Torah. So he thought that everybody wants it. It's unbelievable. The whole Klal Yisrael wants this. And this is the start of Klal Yisrael, right? So everybody wants this. Everybody wants it. What happens? He comes down. What an anticlimactic disappointment. There's what? There's the world dancing around the eagle. And they're dancing around the eagle. So what happened to Nasiv and Nishma? So that's when he realized it's not Toichai Kibarai, right? It's not from the Pnimius. They were saying it because everybody else was saying it. It wasn't a real Nasiv and Nishma. Everybody else said Nasiv and Nishma. So I say Nasiv and Nishma. Everybody else is doing it, so I'm going to do it. Monkey see, so monkey do. Right? But what happened when he came down? So now he said, this can't happen again. You have to figure out who the real ones. Who the real ones. Again, there's two malchim, like I told you. You need to get the other guys too. Right? So Moshe Rabbeinu said, you know what? I'm opening up a shtiva. I'm going out. I'm leaving. Where am I going? I'm going to go outside the tchum. Whoever wants, what's the lashon of the pasuk? Yaakov mevakesh Hashem. Whoever's a real teichlik bar, he's going to come to me. It's difficult. Yeah, it's difficult. What's going to happen? He's going to have to walk outside the tchum. He's going to say, oh, you know, my shoes aren't good, and it's hot outside. All right, this other rabbi, I'll ask him tomorrow. I'll go tomorrow. If he's not toichi gebara, he's going to find every excuse not to go. Once it's difficult, he's going to find excuses not to go. Right? But hayabavakish Hashem, that's when I'm going to know who the real guys are. But when it's, when Moshe Rabbeinu left Marchik min Amachana, he wasn't trying to marachik them. He was trying to make it that he has to see who the people that are the good guys, who are the ones that are going to come even when it's difficult. That's a pshat in the pasuk. Right? I'm right? That's a nice pshat. It's a nice chat. So he's a going means it's not my chat. That's what I could say. But let me tell you like this. There was a great Jew named Meir Chadosh. Meir Chadosh was Rav Aaron Chadosh's father. You know, obviously, you heard of Rav Aaron Chadosh, the Mashgiach in the Mir. So let me tell you about his father. Just understand that there were people like this. Right? He was a 12-year-old boy. And his mother said to him, you know, you're going to go to your bar mitzvah. You're going to be in Amaretz. You have to go to yeshiva. You know, where he was, there was no yeshiva. So he said, where is he going to go? He's a 12-year-old boy. So his mother said, you have a cousin, Label. Label learns in Slobodka. Go back with your cousin when he comes back on Ben Hazman. You'll go back with your cousin to Slobodka Yeshiva, 12-year-old boy. We think that the yeshivas of 100 years ago were filled with the diaper lach and whatever, right? You know, all little kids. It wasn't like that. It was always iluyim, but it wasn't a normal thing. A 12-year-old boy should go to yeshiva even then. So he goes to yeshiva. His mother sent him with a couple of loaves of bread. They had to travel. Obviously, the travel in those days was quite difficult. It wasn't easy. He comes to yeshiva. And he was a Baal Kishrin, but he was Nachalts, he was a 12-year-old boy. Right? Comes to yeshiva, they asked the Mashkiach. The Mashkiach thought this was weird, a 12-year-old boy should be taking a fahar. Right? So he starts talking to him, he's nice, he's a 12-year-old boy. So right in front of the boy, the Mashkiach in Slobodka, he says to the label, to label the cousin, he says to, right? To see you, it gives me so much chizik.
That's why I came in.
And it worked. So he tells him that what's the pshat? What are you bringing a 12-year-old boy for? What are you bringing a 12-year-old boy for? You're right in front of him. What are you bringing? What were you thinking to bring him to yeshiva? Not going to get to yeshiva. Right? And he gave him a musa shmuz, right in front of him. So kitzur, he walks out. That's it. Look how you go home, right? Look how you go home now. So he says, no. He tells his cousin, look, I'm here, I want to learn, and Mela, we have to figure out a way to make this work. So his cousin said, okay, let's. They knocked on doors in Kovna. I heard the story from Rav Moshe Chadosh, that was his son, his brother, the one that was just nifted. And he they were looking for a bed. They knocked on doors in Kovna. Does anybody have a bed? So they found one person who had a three-legged bed. Who knows what's the problem with a three-legged bed? Does it work? One leg there, one leg there, one leg there. And there's no leg there. Yeah, it's not going to work. Yeah. So they had to figure it out. They had to get bricks. They found to the forest and they got stones. And the bed had rust on it. But also there was no, you couldn't sleep in the house. You didn't have room in the house. So they knocked on different doors and they found a person who was masking that this 12-year-old boy should sleep in the corridor, in the entrance of the house. But he has to only come late at night because, you can't block the entrance. And he has to leave early in the morning. So this 12-year-old boy slept on a bed that wasn't really a bed. It was like a broken bed with three legs and rust. And, now what about eat? What is he going to eat? So he had that little piece of bread still. He didn't know how long this was going to last. And he wanted to try to get another fare. So, and his mother gave him a little stick of butter. It was a little steak. It was filled with a lot of love, but there was not that much butter, right? And when people would see him with the bread, he wanted to show people that he had. So he would take a slice off of his treasure chest over there, to show I have look what I have, in the thing. And he found some Makolik guy who was masking to give him old bread, and he found a fishmonger who was masking that he can have some yoich. I don't even know how you say yoich in English because there is no word for it. It's exactly, yeah. Mm-hmm. Dr. Seuss, but about upon him, it's mamish a bit, yeah? And that's what he ate for about a week. 2 weeks went by. He couldn't have chavrusas and sabotka because he wasn't in. But Label learned with him, so he was learning basically all day by himself, sleeping on a rusty bed without how many legs did it have? No, by that point, one of the legs broke. One of the other leg broke. Right? So he took two of the bricks off of this side and put them over there. So the bed was like this. right? And every night he'd daven that he doesn't fall, because, you know, it was like, it wasn't so tall, it wasn't so tall. But al kapanim, and then, and what about, okay, the chavrus, but he learned kedushin, he learned this, and he would talk to bachurim in yeshiva, and talk to bachurim in yeshiva, and then hopefully that, you know, they'll be able to get him. This went on for 3 weeks, after about 4 weeks, he was about to break from this. He's a 12-year-old boy, he's 12 years old. Right, not like, you know, 12-year-old boy means he doesn't even have his facial hair. Not like that guy who's born with 3 years old and he's got to shave everybody. But I'm saying he's a 12-year-old boy. Kids are, this boy, after 4 weeks, about to break. He went to yeshiva. There was somebody there named Yecheskel Bernstein. You ever hear of Yecheskel Bernstein? You did. He wrote a sefer called the Divrei Yecheskel. Right? Now that you might have heard of. Your baby might have brought that. And he was, I think, the Rosh Hashiva of the Yeshiva Ketana in Slobok, I think, afterward. He was a Shiva or something. And Lemaisa. And I say, he told him, listen, I did the same thing that you did. It's kedai to persevere. And I pushed him more for another 3 weeks or whatever it was. And then finally, this boy's name started getting, like, people were talking about this, right? So the Mashkiach, the Rashiv, they were asking to give him a fair. They figured, look, he's a little boy. They'll give him a fair on Kedushin. They heard he's learning Kedushin now. So he starts fire and giving Kedushin. And it turned out that he knew every Rashi and Taisis in the Sechta Kedushin over the course of those 2 months because he pushed, right? Because, like the pasuk says over there, if I call Mevakesh Hashem Yeitza, because when a person is Toich Lekibara and he's going to learn, so even if, you know, nobody else around him is learning, so when the only reason he learns is because of that social pressure, so then when it's going to come the time and the social pressure is gone, so then obviously, you know, but Masha Enkein, like you saw in the Gemara, when they took away the Shomer, so then everybody came in because now it wasn't difficult. But regular Shomer was there. The only people that came to learn were the people that had that desire. So what should I tell you? Was it Gedai who came in just for that? Yeah, I think so. Okay, so now it's the end of the Zman, right? It's the end of the Zman. So now's the time when, you know, when the people that learn, even though it's not the popular thing, or people that are gonna be staying, right? You know, not everybody's able to stay. Sometimes it's some social family reason or whatever. But that the fact that, you know, that there's some people that it's not even a Havamina, right? It's not even like a Havamina by them, right? So then that's not, and I'm not donning anybody, I'm just saying, but not Avimina Metzad himself, I'm saying. You know, sometimes a person has the parents and this, that, he can't, this, that, right? But then there's a person that the pshat is that, he, you know, his desire is to continue learning and to do whatever's going to be best for him next month, right? So that's where you reveal Toichei Kibara, right? All the great people, you know, who stays at the end of the chasana, right? You know, the chasana, when somebody's dancing, you know, so you can never know who's the chassan's best friend and who's the family, because maybe the guy's dancing like a Seville de Baim or because he just likes to dance, right? But then when you, at the end of the chasana, right, that's how you know who the machatonim are, or the people that really be'emis, right? It's also the people that want to get paid, right? But, you know, but that's how you know who the people that are the real Teichei Kibara dickers and the people that are. Okay, so that's why I came today to tell you that. And now you can ask me whatever you want. I probably won't know the answer, but yeah.
That's okay. About
playing music by Hallel? Yeah. What do you mean, like a banjo?
Yeah. You gotta get by.
In the middle of Hallel?
You heard of this part?
No, I never heard of this.
Having a band by Hallel.
I'm gonna tell you a biggie story.
Musical Hallel.
What?
Musical Hallel.
No, but they mean like with an accordion. And I told you guys not to do this. Wait, you mean like your drums and like
band?
Like,
we got the band.
What? Like an organ and
six-piece orchestra.
Listen, I don't know.
Flutes and
I never saw a bear with Yashiv. Let me explain. Right? I'm sure there are. You have to understand two nekudas here. Two nekudas. One nekuda is that there was always a cheirim from the Chassam Sofer and from Rabbi Kiva Eger, going back already 200 years in the time of the Maskilim, not to be bringing musical instruments into a Beis Medrash. Now, their reason was, because that's what the Maskilim were doing, they were bringing organs, they were bringing this and whatever, and that was one reason, right? So they once asked, I think, the Chassam Sofer. This is Ish Mepi Fish, but I can't verify the Shmua, right? But they once asked Rabbi Kiva Eger, the Chassam Sofer, and what will be at a time when, you know, it's no longer, you know, they saw the foresight already that, you know, the churches aren't existent anymore, right? So the Chassam Sofer said that the tzura of musical instruments in a shul is meyuchad only for the Beis HaMikdash, right? That tzura, because why didn't Chazal, Well, Hare, you know, the big kasha, in the base of Mikdash they had flutes, in the base of Mikdash they had levium, they had all this, right? So why don't we have this taka in our shul? The big pella, right? That's a bit, it's mamash a big kasha. We try to make every dogma of our shuls like the base of Mikdash, right? The Chasam Sofer has a whole tshuva that the bima has to be in the middle. That's our minig, right? The bima has to be in the middle, and then the dafka to show that the Torah is accessible to everyone, and just like the mizbeach is in the middle, and the whole tsura of our shul in every which way is somewhat a dogma of the base of Mikdash, right? So, punk, the one thing not is musical instruments. So the Chasam Sofer, I never saw this in print. This is what I was told over. But that the Chasam Sofer said over that there's something that is left just for the Beis HaMikdash. And music is something that connects the Neshama straight to the Shechina. So obviously you can listen to music at other times if you hold that you'll have to listen to music. But to have it in the Tzura, yeah, whatever. But I had to throw that in. I can't throw it by saying, right? But if you, you know, whatever it is that you're listening to music, but not in the Makam of Tefillah, the only way we can connect, it's too hailing. It won't work by us. It won't work. That's one reason. But the other reason is that, and this is me talking now. Till now it was Chasam Sofer, and me, so me is worth less. But the first thing is taka comes from the core. The second thing is a lot of people, what they do is they make a mistake during davening. I'm not saying davening shouldn't be gishmak and dancing and singing or whatever, Kabbalah Shabbos and all these things. Right? But sometimes what a person does is that he winds up just dancing, just singing, right? And everyone likes dancing and singing. And you could have just for the same price, you know, traded those words which aren't beseder. Obviously, you know, mitach shalei lishma balishma, but a person has to be emistic. If you're enjoying the halal because you enjoy music, right? So then that might not be halal, right? You know, so that's not the, that's just, you know, dancing and singing and whatever. And you know, and I know that today everybody's trying as hard as they can to do whatever they can to make everything gishmak and everything this and everything that and whatever, right? But that's what you just saw a minute ago, right? That the 400 Safsalim that came into the base medrash in order to make it comfortable is only going to work just so long. If his entire yachas and connection to a davening a halal is when there's going to be an organ, there's not always going to be an organ in halal. There's not always going to be a guitar in a halal, right? So what he's doing is he's setting himself up for a situation of where he's not going to be able to enjoy halal. And that can't be, right? So he's going to what? For the rest of his life, he's going to daven in a shul that has a guitar during halal, right? It's a, you know. You know, by the way, there's going to come a point where you're an old man, like myself in the Rosh Shiva, and you're just going to, you know, like, no, right? You know, not the Rosh Shiva, Mike, myself, right? You know, no, I'm saying with the musical instruments and the this and that, you know, not myself, right? But you could be an old man, right? You know, not everybody's miuchad like the Rosh Shiva also, right? So that is to be a miuchadic person. So you're setting yourself up for a situation of, did I just say something not politically correct? It's always nice for me to know. Did I,
Just the insinuation that I'm old is the only thing I
said. No. I'm old. I'm just afraid I'm about to get banned. They even banned Dr. Seuss. You don't even know that, do you? The liberals are always safe to Dal Deshan. It's unbelievable. I'm about to say, banning Dr. Seuss is a very scary thing. You should know that. Very scary thing. Because if they're banning Dr. Seuss, right, so then what's next, Kindleah?
Nothing sacred,
right? Like this guy, when he was writing Dr. Seuss, he had all of these intentions, and he had all of this, and he had all these Pirush Rashis involved in what they're talking about, the club, right? But the point is that Berega that they're banning, so why? That's the whole cancel culture. That's the whole entire cancel culture. The whole entire cancel culture is the entire hippich of our entire Yiddishkeit, right? That means that you can't say something, and the Berega you say it, you're nitra, you're out. You don't exist anymore. Right? That means I'm afraid to say something. It means I can't say things to my talmidim because I might get in trouble. If I can't say something, that's more dangerous than the Holocaust, right? If I can't tell you what's the emes, then what chance do we have?
They could very well ban, Chas v'Shalom, but the Torah talks about slavery.
Well, you don't have to go. The Rashiva doesn't have to go that far. There's a lot of things in our Torah, man. Yeah, right. Yeah, if they would find out. Yeah, right? You know. By the way, we believe in all this. Right, we believe in all this. The second they see all this, right? So Dr. Seuss is far better than the Midrashim, okay? Yeah. Far better than the Psukim, right? So what's stopping them from that? And what's stopping our people from having to like constantly fanfare and fanfare? No, we mean this. It means this. No, we mean what it says. Mm-hmm. Right? We mean exactly what it says. Exactly what it says is what we mean. Exactly what it says is what we mean. Exactly, right? Whatever we say about Mishkav Zachar, whatever we say about every single thing there is exactly what we mean, right? You know, the day they decide you can marry your sister, like as if that's not coming, right? The day they decide that you can marry your sister, so what are we going to do then? We're going to say, no, we understand that people do marry sisters and whatever, right? I'm using that as a mashal. The nimshal of what's going on today is far, far, far worse, right? But this is a lashon naki, right? The day that they say this, the day they say, so what are we going to do now? So I'm not going to be able to tell you guys, right? Because I'm going to have to be afraid that someone's going to take this, he's going to go and put it on the internet, and then my life is going to be ruined. But I'm not afraid of anybody except for God, right? But there are people out there that are going to be afraid, and they're going to be scared, and they're not going to tell you the emes. Right? So when you hear things like that, you have to sit there. You have to sit there. You hear things like that, you have to sit there. Pachav chodem. That's what they're doing. Pachav chodem. You know? We talk about something nice? Right? Yeah? Scrambled eggs? Oh no. Yeah? Oh no, I can't say those words.
What? So it's Mahal. We have a guy, he's tired. Not like really tired. Like, I don't say burnt out, but... Does Rebbe say you push hard at that moment, or does Rebbe say you go into like survival mode?
Each person is different. It also depends, like there's a finish line, right? There's a finish line. You know, like I'll tell you like this. I am able now, I'm also a little bit like tired, right? I'm able to push now because I know there's a finish line, right? Whatever is going to happen, whether the Ben Zmanim is going to be Takin Yeshiva or not in Yeshiva or whatever, but it's definitely not going to be the same Tzura. Right, it's obviously going to be a more relaxed tour, right? So there's a finish line. Whenever I can, when you know, like 2 weeks before Hanukkah, right? I tell people not to burn out because you can get to Hanukkah, right? And Hanukkah there's going to be somewhat of a break, right? And even if you know the break is whatever, nachalts, there's going to be something different, right? There's going to be something different. And you know, 2 weeks before the end of this man, I never understood how a person could burn out in the last 2 weeks of after Purim. I don't even mastic it. It's just 2 more weeks. You should do that in life in general, right? That's the what we learned from the stipler. When everyone knows the story of the stipler, when he had the coat on the tree. Everyone knows the story. And then 5 more minutes. I could do 5 more minutes. I could do 5 more minutes. I could do, right? Some people live their life like that. I could do the Seder, right? The last 10 minutes of Seder, that's the time when he leaves the Seder early. I don't even masik it. I don't chop the masik. I have 5 more minutes. 5 more minutes I can handle, right? The problem is when the Seder ends at like 12:40. Right, you know, it really ends at 1, but now in my mind it ends at 12:40, so I can do 5 more minutes at 12:20. But that's, a person has to be able to use the finish line as a way to give him chizik. So in Hanami, if you see a person and he's already holding by like, you know, he's in, Lag Ba'Omer, right? And but you always, that's how I do it. That's how I do it. I get to Lag Ba'Omer, I say, okay, I can make it till Shavuos. And Shavuos is going to be something different. It's going to get a break, whatever it is. But it's a different stura. It's a different everything. Shavuos hits, right? Shavuos is harder. If he's burnt out right after day after Shavuos, it's much harder. Then the person has to know himself, right? But if a person gets it ready to Tammuz, you know, says, okay, I can get there. I can get there. For 2 more weeks, 3 more weeks, I can handle that, right? That's how I do it. That works for me also. Right? I do it every week. I do it every week. Right? Shabbos. What? Yeah. I can't wait for Shabbos. I don't know how the goyim. When did the goyim chazed their learning b'cha? Right? I don't even know what they do b'cha. Right? No. I can't wait when it hits Thursday. I always tell you guys. Right? Whenever I tell you, I always love this year. Right? Because Shabbos is coming and everything is calm and everything is different. And that, right? I just wait when it hits Wednesday. It's like already a yontif because they say luchun around in the davening in the morning. The shul says, "I know Shabbos is coming. I can push now. Thursday I can push. I can Friday I can push. When already on Sunday it's difficult. Then it's already, you know. But next week I'll be able to push because the end of this man is coming. It's like 1 more week. I can handle that. That's how I do things. It works for me. That's what she would say.
Do you want to ask a question?
Yeah.
Is there one person you'd say was the most impactful person in your life?
Besides Rosh Hashiva. Right? We should know there's a lot of truth to that. There is a lot of truth to that. Right? There's a lot of truth to that. Because whenever I want to do something to push me to in something, whether it's opening a koilul or whether I just opened another one or a machlobo, right? Israeli one. But I keep thinking to myself, center does more. Right, I don't say Rabbi sent it when I think like that, right? But he does more, right? So there are people that I look up to that push and push and push me, right? And it could be that that I'm not at all exaggerating. Because since he is my age, right, old man, yeah, since he is my age, I always look at him. Right, he's got a few more white hairs than me. I'm still winning.
Yeah, I know.
You don't know what Jungleite are. You don't know what Bachram are.
But older people, like Scheinberg.
The one that has the most impact is Eliashiv. Just the Metzius of Eliashiv, where everything was so simple. Everything was so simple, and the knowledge of Kol Terkulu was so simple, and everything was so normal there. I used to watch him daven. He davened so normal. So normal. It wasn't like with Koilas, it wasn't like Brock, and it was so normal. It was so normal. Everything was so normal. Everything was so normal. Just everything, and knowing everything. It gave me such a thirst to know everything, because he knows everything. Right? There was nothing he didn't know. I never in my life ever, I once asked Rav Frati after he was Nifter, I asked him, did you ever see him take out a safer to look something up? I asked him every single Friday, 30 questions, right? Afterward, when it didn't work out by Rav Eliashiv, I started coming and hanging out with you guys. Right? But I used to ask him 30 questions every single Friday. But they were the questions that I was learning, the sugyas inside and being and this and that, right? With Eli Marvel, we used to learn together, and I used to go on Friday, every Friday to ask him these 30 questions, right? And never, like a gun, everything. I asked Rafat, did you ever see him take out a safe to look something up? He said, yeah, there was one time. I was like, like a Maram Shik. I remember what he said. It was like one time he looked something up. It gave me a thirst but it only gave me a thirst because of the fact that it was so normal there. You didn't feel like, when you walked in there, you were only awestruck because you knew who you were dealing with, right? You knew who you were dealing with. Yeah, I remember the Malchus, they used to have when they would have the elections, right? So what would go on is let's say now, right? So the next week, you're going to see this place plastered with Gimel and this and that, right?
Color war.
Not Stam color war, the red team, different color war, but so the kids are, so next week it's going to be all over and everywhere. I remember how it would be all over, everyone would be talking about it and whatever. And still not one sign from Rav Eliashiv. Nothing from Rav Eliashiv. Right? And then Rav Eliashiv would get a shiur. It would be about a week before. No, just what's Malchus? Just what's Malucha? Then after the shiur, everybody would ask Rav Eliashiv questions. Rav Eliashiv would be sitting there. Everything simple. Nunu. Every answer was Kimat Nunu. Nunu sometimes means Nunu, yeah? Nunu means no. Sometimes Nunu means you're stepping on my foot, right? Nunu can be a lot of things. Right? But there was so much malchus there in this simple tzura that he was. They would come in, let's say it was about a week before the election, and they would say, "Does the Eliashiv hold that you should vote?" Rav said, "No vada." That they would say it like that, "No vada," right? Rav Frati would stand there right in front of the Eliashiv, and who should they vote for? No, and for the Shaila and for the Yadut HaTorah, whatever the Gdayim say, the Gemel, Rav Eliashiv is going to vote No vada, yeah. Within a second, you had to see it. It was a mind boggling. Within a second, they already had the letters there ready. They had it's called plakatim, these big posters. Within a second, the whole entire streets of Meir Shearim, right, are plastered. And then the other guys are coming and ripping them down. But the whole entire streets are plastered that the king, the melech of all Beis Yisrael, just said to vote for Yadut HaTorah, to vote for Gimel and whatever. But the point was, it wasn't by him, there was no rash. There was no Koilus, there was no Brock. It was so because that was the beauty of it. It was the rash was so outside of him. No, Vada, you would think he got up and said, right? All he had to do was say, yeah, Vada. The same way he said to me, is if you move that thing, he said, Moksa, yeah, no, Vada, right? So simple, so Moiridic, and to know everything, right? I can't explain it more than that, if you understood. I also saw him one time. The chrayis was incredible. The chrayis was something that had a tremendous the responsibility. I remember once we were walking, and there was about 20 people walking around him, and he had a walker at that point, and there was a little girl crossing the street, like an 8-year-old girl. You know that street over there by his house, right? Where the alley over there, and then there's the street, right? It's like the most dangerous street in Yerushalayim, right? It's also the most in those days it was the most frequently visited by cabs. Because there were like 3 or 4 spots in Yerushalayim. There was, Mir Yeshiva, right? There was the Kaisel, right? And there was Eliashiv. Right? That was those were the like the spots that the cab driver. I'm not joking, you know. You just had to say Eliashiv. The cab drivers knew exactly where to go. And so Eliashiv is walking. There's 20 people asking a question. Somebody was asking Mishael at the time about a psua daka, like of the most difficult questions. And Rav Eliashiv over there sees a girl and she's standing by the corner. Eliashiv went like this, like that, right? To tell somebody to get her, she shouldn't be standing over there. That was one of the most murderic things I ever saw by Rav Eliashiv. There's 20 people around. He saw an 8-year-old girl crossing the street. 8-year-old girl. 8-year-old girl. Usually you have an 8-year-old girl in Meir Shar, and she's crossing what? Her 3-year-old daughter, and the 2-year-old, and the 4-year-old, and the 1-year-old, and the this, and that.
Right? With the
burqa. With the burqa, and she's got the galop, his man kariv, and dog. You know exactly what's going on, right? And there he is, and Rav Eliashiv is the only one there that sees this girl, because he had the chrais of all of Klal Yisrael. That gave me a big cheshek to have an chrais for Klal Yisrael. That gave me a big cheshek. Any other shayla? Rav Yashiv and Rav Shashiva. Those are the two people. Right? Now, the Rav Shiva, because he's more my age, right? Even though I'm winning. Right? And Rav Yashiv, because he was so awesome, awesome, yet it was simple, it was normal, it was pashut there. Right? Now, I admit, I don't feel that by Rav Chaim Kanievsky. When you go to Rav Chaim, it's just so, it's overwhelming, right? But you should know, the doyrus, the way they work, nobody, every gadol in every door is the gadol of that door, right? Yiftach b'doyroi is as big as Shmuel and doyroi, right? But you have to realize that what you're hearing about Rav Chaim Kanievsky, it's a shadow of what Rav Eliashiv was. Again, in every door, and I'm not Chalila, everybody knows that I'm not in the slightest being mezalz of anything. And how do I know that? Because any time I would ever ask Rav Chaim Kanievsky, and in those days he knew I was asking by Rav Eliashiv, he'd say, yeah, why are you asking me? Like, you should ask... You know, everyone knew Rav Eliashiv was, I'll tell you one story. Rav Eliashiv had a mechutin named Reber, his son, Binyamin Reber, right? What was the name of his father? Moshe, maybe? He had a mechutin named Reber. This Reber was in Auschwitz. He was about to die. He asked this question to Rav Eliashiv. He was about to die. In other words, his daughter, Yashu's daughter, married this Reimer. So the Reimer's father, it's called the Mechutin, right? So the Rav Eliashiv, no, I spoke the other day and somebody said to me, what's a Mechutin? But Rav Eliashiv, his Mechutin, this Reimer was so much for coming early and leaving early and whatever. But so Rav Eliashiv's Mechutin told Rav Eliashiv this story. He told him when he was in the camps, he started having a terrible feeling. It was probably typhus. And he knew he was about to die. He felt he was about to die because he couldn't bear the not having something to eat anymore. And he felt that his body wasn't going to make it anymore. He said he went outside to look for food. He was almost like what we call oxy bulmus. He walks outside and all he sees is snow and ice. There's no food. So he sees a person walking. The person's walking with a treasure. He's walking with 4 pieces of bread. So he told Eliashiv that he asked the person for the piece of bread. He asked the piece of bread and the person said, no way, no way. Right? And so he tripped him up. He tripped him up and he grabbed a piece of bread and he saved his life. So yesterday Rav Eliashiv 3 questions. Yesterday Rav Eliashiv said, until today, he thinks about the mice. He said, first of all, did he do the right thing? Second of all, does he have to do a Shabbos Gzela? And third of all, if he does have to do a Shabbos Gzela, how's he going to do a Shabbos Gzela? Could be the price of a piece of bread in Auschwitz or the price of a piece of bread today? Does a Shabbos Yesterday Rav Eliashiv? Rav Eliashiv, you know, us when we hear that story, we shake. Right? Didn't flinch. Rav Eliashiv said, Chape, if you should have done it or not. So Rav Eliashiv said, look, Mastam, if you had 4 pieces of bread. So he said, so Manashach, either in that Metzias, 1 piece was enough for to not be in a matzah pekuch nefesh of an immediate pekuch nefesh. So Elamai, the other 3 pieces, either he was saving, which for him wouldn't have been an immediate pekuch nefesh, or it was for somebody else. So he said, so the Mayul Me'ai Me'ai, he has no right more to the piece of bread, to the other person than you, right? So he says, so then the halacha says, it's a Gemara Baba Kama and Daf Samech, that you're allowed to save your life. It's not one of the Gimel Chamuras that you have to give up your life for. Right? But you have to have the Das that you're going to pay back. You have to have the Das that you're going to pay back. So maybe you do have a Shabbos Gzela. Shaila number 1. Shaila number 2 is, how do you do a Shabbos Gzela? You don't know if this person's alive. You don't know if this person, where he is, who he is, whatever. So Rav Eliashiv said, so that the Gemara says also, the Gemara Baba Metzia said that you have to do a Shabbos Rabbim. The person stole, he doesn't know where he stole from. So you do something that the Rabbim will benefit from. Hopefully that is like an umdana that either he himself will benefit somehow from it, or he'd be happy at least that the tzibur is getting a benefit from it. Like I tell people when they call me, you know, buy a chair for the kaisel, you know, something like that. Right, but not gonna, somebody else the other day, about a month ago, he asked me the shayla. You know, he told him maybe buy a chair for the kaisel. So he said to me he's gonna have to buy bleachers, right? But you know, like, so, doesn't always work. So he said, so yeah. He said the other shayla, is that you have to pay kefi the piece of bread in Auschwitz, but that you need a raya for. So they asked Rav Yashiv, what's the raya? So Rav Yashiv said, so there was on, I think the story was on like on a yontif or something like that. So he said, when Chaim comes, you'll ask him for the raya. Because he comes every year, he used to come to visit Rav Yashiv. Says, when Chaim comes, Chaim is, when Chaim comes, you'll ask him for the raya. Chaim comes, walks in, right, the next day or whatever it was, or that night, I think it was, I think he used to come on Moitzei yontif. And he said, no, they asked him, what's the raya? It's on the spot. It must be so geschmack to know called Tarkula. On the spot. Ah, the raya is from Avram Avinu. What's the raya from Avram Avinu? The raya is, the Gemara says, the Medrash says, that Avram Avinu used to come to him to get a good meal. He used to come for a good meal. There's Avram Avinu. You come in there, don't you want a meal? He says, yeah, Father. What do you have? Oh, they had like good stuff like shawarma and dead goat, bad, and all geschmack is achen, but with good drinks like RC and Crystal, like, all the good stuff. Yeah, no, sure. It's too good a drink. Don't laugh, you're killing me. So it gets there. How are you guys? I'm so happy I'm here right now. So it gets there, comes with all the good drinks. Afterward, Avraham Avinu says, no, the fellow says, no, vifal cost to us. How much did it cost? Rabbi Avinu says, money, baini baini. What it comes from me, the food. I made goats, right? I made all these chemicals. I did. The Rabbi Nishalelam. Thank the Rabbi Nishalelam. And then you don't have to pay because you're paying the Rabbi Nishalelam. You know, it's just, Harab says, I don't have to pay. What do I have to do? I have to thank Hashem. Yabba dub dub. Thanks for the grub. Yay, Lord. Right? Okay, Givaldi. I'm happy. Avraham Avinu's happy. Kodesh Baruch Hu's happy. Everybody's happy. But sometimes you get like a bad guy. Like a real Nimrod Azah, you know. Comes in there, he eats, and here, right? More. Kids afterward, Avraham Avinu, no, you have to pay. He says, okay, how much is it? He says, look at the whole story. You don't really have to pay if you thank Hashem and this and that. No, I don't do that. He says, okay, fine. So let's make a bill. So Avraham Avinu with the business end, you know. He says, okay, shawarma. How much does shawarma cost over here? Like 30 shekels?
55 shekels.
How much?
55 shekels.
Oh my goodness, we were 30 shekels.
What?
All right, 30 shekels. Okay. 55 shekels. So Avraham Avinu says, okay, 55,000 shekels. Okay, and how much is a nice geschmack, a cup of crystal with the little, you know, like the slushy ones and the dust, like 12 shekels? 12 shekels. So Avraham Avinu writes, 12,000 shekels. And he had 7 cups. You know, 84,000 shekel, right? You know, right? And he had afterward like what those the what's that famous the fancy cake that everyone likes, the Ziegelberry, I think it's called, right? The
souffle.
What's the one with all the cream and the layers? What? Ziegelman, Ziegelberry, or whatever this guy's name is. Right? And that costs like how much? That's like a lot of money. That cake. It's like a $60 cake or an $80 cake. So he says, okay, 800,000 shekels. He's sitting there, right? It comes out to like, you know, to, well, 1,342,000 shekels. Right? So he says, what are you talking about? I said, look, what are you talking about? You're in the middle of a desert, tough guy. What do you think? You to bring the goat over here and this and that, and you know, so that's how much it costs over here. You're right, over there in the town, in the shtetl, over there in Dortmund and Mecca, right? So then it doesn't cost like that. But over here, how much does it cost a shawarma and how much does it cost this? Right? But then the guy would say, okay, you know what? Maybe it's good to thank Hashem. And that's a medrash, right? So Dr. Chaim Kanievsky, Avraham Avinu was an Erlich person. He wasn't lying. He wasn't swindling, right? He wasn't being a swindler. He was saying the Amis. So Avraham Avinu is telling him, what is the price of a goat in the Midbar? So Dr. Chaim Kanievsky says, you see, like Rav Yashiv, right? That Taka. How much do you have to pay for the price of bread? You have to pay for the amount of a price of a slice of bread in Auschwitz. That's whatever that is. Right? Yeah, how do you figure that out? Okay. What? Sorry? Oh, yeah. Thank you, Hashem. Right. Okay. What are the shadows, guys?
If you have like an option to put yourself to finish a masechta, but you might not
know it as well, or you can spend more time, but you kind of cover less stuff. What's the better option?
It depends where he is. If he's actually going to finish the Masechta, he's holding by the finish point. They say that to Rav Chada Chofetz Chaim when he went to the Asifa when Rav Aaron Kotler was there. So he came over to Rav Aaron. He said to Rav Aaron, he said to him, you have to finish the Masechta. So Rav Aaron used to say over there, that's when he saw Nevuah by the Chofetz Chaim. Rav Aaron had like a Yetzer, Kivyachol, right? That he would learn the Masechta B'Iyan, and it wasn't as important for him to finish the Masechta. Right, he meant, I think, with the Talmidim, but it wasn't as important with him to finish in the Masechta. The Chofetz Chaim told him, you have to finish the Masechta. Rav Aaron used to say that's where he saw the Nevuah by the Chofetz Chaim, right? So then a person, the Vadeh, has to have a goal of finishing. Success comes from success. When a person feels success and he feels he finishes the Masechta, then that builds a desire to know more. And you guys are not dying. You have another 100 years over here, right? You know, so Mela, you'll do it again, and you'll do it again. Obviously, there's a Seder for everything. There's a first Seder, which is for the purpose of the Iyan. There's a second Seder, you know, and also there's also a Liba Chafetz. There are some people. Never be kaveh yourself. You know, there's a lot of people like, I don't like Iyan. Or there's a lot of people, I don't like Bekiyas, right? You know, you should want to be the all-around camper. There's different tkufas in life also. There's different tkufas in life. When I was a Bachar, I didn't even know how to hold the Mishnah Berurah in which way, Bechlau. Right, I didn't open up my Mishnah Berurah until I was 24 years old, I don't think. Right, because I'm learning Iyan. That's what I thought. Oh, Iyan. And the guys that learn halacha, they don't know anything. Right, and then there was a tkufa in my life where I wanted to finish Shas 1,000 times. Right, and then, but you know what? But it was never at the expense in saying, but I'm not an Iyan person. I'm not a Bekiyas person. It should never be like that. There could be tkufas in your life where you like Iyan more. There's tkufas in your life where you like Bekiyas more. You like halacha more. You like medrash more. But the desire to finish Masechta should certainly be there. Right. You have to, you know, it can't come at the expense necessarily. But let's say a person he's holding like, you know, he's got like a few weeks left of his man where he's going to be doing, he knows he has 7 blot left in the Masechta. He knows if he finishes it, he finishes the Masechta. Stomach should finish the Masechta. Stomach finish the Masechta. Did I just answer you? Or?
If you're going into this man, picking which one you could do. You could either do 20 blot, 100 blot Masechta, or you could.
But it's like a new Masechta?
Yeah, going in.
The new Masechta. What's it going to give him more gishmak? What's going to last, first of all? That's one way you make the decision. The second way you make the decision is what's he going to enjoy more? Because it's obviously like an out-of-Seder type of project, correct? Or it's an out-of-Seder project. What's going to last? What's going to be more enjoyable, right? And, you know, that's basically how I would make the decision, right? I don't know if that's called Leilishmar or not, but that's how I would make the decision, right? You know, a lot of times a person wants to do what's right, but then it's not going to last. And so then, you know, yeah.
Is that like something that applies just to Torah, or is that?
Pashas not. The only place they say by tzedakah, for example, right? So that's mefurish that the person is allowed to give the money leilishma. By tzedakah, is allowed to give the money leilishma. Obviously, the goal of everybody is to be doing the things in a gang of where it's going to come lishma. Nobody can be doing something that I want it to remain leilishma. That's the one important thing you need to know about that gemara. Is that nobody can be holding by a malach where it's supposed to remain lay the shema? That's about that doesn't make sense, right? But the person has to know himself of where he's holding, right? Everything is lay the shema. A person comes to yeshiva lay the shema because he wouldn't come to yeshiva if nobody else was coming, right? But he has to go in with the das that, like, I know that's what I'm doing now, right? But I he doesn't have to be thinking this cognizant, but he can't be thinking fakir. You know, I only do it lay the shema, right? So by other things, by chasadim and whatever. Look, if he's going to do things, after a while, you become a different person. You become a giver. Person that gives and gives and gives and gives, eventually he just becomes a giver, and that's it. You know, you teach a child everything by the Shema. You teach a child to share, right? You know, that's Skardistan. Because say, a child, when you teach him to share, you have to understand what he can handle. What he can handle. If somebody would ask you for, you know, can I borrow like your underwear? I mean, there are some things I don't want to lend. Right, you know, so if you have a child that has to be able, so what you do is that a child, I saw this yesterday, my kid had like candy from Mishloach Manos, so the Bachrim came to the house, right? So my wife said, why don't you offer them some candy, right? So what I did was I gave him a lot of candy. I gave him a lot of candy, because you're going to give the kid, he's going to have to give away his one candy that might not be able to handle that, right? But if your kid has a wealth, he has like 20 candies over here, he's still going to have something you're teaching him that you don't lose. Eventually, that's Leil Shema, right? Eventually, he'll be able to do it even when he has one candy. That's but it has to start Leil Shema, but you have to, you know, it gets there. What else, guys? Yeah, that's it.